This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, the opening drive.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore coming to you from Seahawks headquarters, where Seattle has wrapped up the public portion of its training camp. 3 weeks in, a couple days away from their second preseason game, and it's time to start talking about things that we're excited about. Things that you look forward to, a team that doesn't have the same brand recognition that it did 2 years ago. It doesn't have the same expectations that it did 2 years ago, and has a renewed emphasis on the ground game. And I think we'll start there because Rashad Penny out with a broken bone in his hand, a broken finger, yet Chris Carson has continued to impress and show you that what we thought a year ago this time, which was that the Seahawks really might have something here.
Yeah, you know, I like to go back to his high school days, Chris Carson, because his career really got derailed. And this is where I think, you know, John Schneider is really good at finding a gem, like a hidden gem. And, you know, one of them was at the end of his high school career, his senior year, he got hurt. He got hurt like halfway through. Now, he had offers from Georgia, which is like running back U, right? And ended up having to go to community college because of the injury. Just all of those offers dropped away. And I want to say he had like Notre Dame. He had a whole bunch of, Chris Carson did a whole bunch of scholarship opportunities and offers, and they went away when he got hurt. So he had to go to JUCO, and then he ends up 2 years there and then goes to Oklahoma State. And then, you know, he's just kind of behind schedule. And now you see that at this level, and some guys, for whatever reason, they actually play better as pros than they were in college and high school. The normal progression is, you know, you're like the superstar. If you're going to be in the NFL, you're the superstar of maybe the entire state. Then you go to college and, you know, you're All-American or All-League, whatever. And then you get in the NFL and you're just kind of one of the guys. There are some of those guys that become superstars in the league. And I don't know that, that he doesn't have an opportunity to be a star. He looks so solid, so good. He can catch. He can block. He's a big guy. He's got great speed. So, yeah, this guy, I won't list him as what I'm most excited about, but he's right up there.
Well, how long do you think he's going to be the first string running back? Or do you think they're going to end up sharing ball-carrying duties there with Rashad Penny once he comes back from this broken finger? And I'm excited about Carson, too. I know he's looked great in training camp, but still, coming off the injury that he had. And last year, it's so funny with Chris Carson, and I agree with you. I think it's a great story. Seventh-round pick, and the guy never fumbles, and he looks terrific. And yet we talk about him like he ran for 1,000 yards last year, and he didn't. He had one game where he ran for 92 yards, like that was something special. And it was, given what they had last year. So I understand the hype, but, you know, I'm kind of taking a step back and thinking, all right, well, let's see how Chris Carson does this year. And I still expect that Rashad Penny would be the guy eventually.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, he's a first-rounder. Certainly he should be. How I envision this year going is that I think Chris Carson's going to be the leading ball carrier, and then a close second is going to be Rashad Penny. And then I see him having, you know, a lot of receptions. You know, you can use him out of the backfield. I just think it'd be a nice little change up from Chris Carson, but we'll see. I mean, eventually, if you draft a guy in the first round, you're expecting him to be the starter.
Remember when Sean Alexander was drafted, though? Mm-hmm. Ricky Waters was the starter here, and Ricky Waters definitely had a different track record than Chris Carson. You're right to point out, Jim. He had a month of promising football. Like, that's the best way to put it, right? There wasn't any sort of game that was like
he wasn't as good as Thomas Rawls was when Rawls was going well.
Correct, but the Seahawks offense wasn't nearly as good as when Rawls was going nuts either. So those sort of things. You've got a month of promising play from Chris Carson. But then you got Rashad Penny. I think it's going to work out where you're going to see Chris Carson's going to be the starting running back, and that will hold true as long as he's healthy this year. And there will be three or four games where Penny ends up leading the team in rushing and or carries, that he gets to be the hot hand and they end up going to him there. But I really think, and really the injury to Rashad Penny only sort of further entrenches that I think you're going to see Chris Carson be the lead back, especially early in the season. And C-Raj, I believe we have sound from Russell Wilson. Curtis, are you there?
I am there.
Hey, how are you?
Good, and yes, we do have sound from Russell Wilson on Chris Carson.
Can I hear him brag about Chris Carson, please?
Well, he was pretty impressive last year. You know, to think about how he came in as a rookie and all the plays and all the things he did starting off. But he's a star running back in this league, and I think everybody will see that coming up this year.
He's a star running back in this league.
Well, I don't know if he is.
He's a star running back in this league.
They see the potential in him. You know, you're right, Jim. Well, we know this. It's 62 and a half yards that you have to rush for to be a 1,000-yard rusher. Don't you think he was headed that way? I mean, it got better and better for him. It was such a shame. I hate seeing injuries. That thing, especially when it derails somebody, kind of like C.J. Procise. And that'll be the other big question, you know, how does he fit in? But he needs to be available. He's out there now practicing. But, yeah, so, Rashad Penny, hopefully this broken finger doesn't slow him down. But, yeah, when you draft somebody in the first round, although here it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, you know, if he's a first-round draft choice and somebody else is playing better, and I'm not saying it's not that way other places, but I feel like they will more readily move on from a player if he doesn't pan out than other teams.
What are you most excited about for this Seahawks season? I ask you that, the listeners, 206-421-3776. We'll start going through this because we spent a lot of time talking about who isn't here and what the concerns are. We know the pass rush is a worry. We know that the defense is unproven. What are you excited about with this team?
Yeah, so for me, I'm just going to pick one player, and that's Shaquem Griffin. And I see it over and over again. Today, out here, he would have had a big hit on Tanner McAvoy. And I see so many times him running through gaps, shooting through where it would be a tackle for a loss. And, of course, there's no tackling out here. But he goes in the game and has 9 tackles. How do you keep that guy off the field? And, you know, I don't put him out there as a Sam. It's fine. If he's flying around. I've never seen a player's, especially at linebacker, I've never seen a player's speed show up on the field the way his does. I mean, here he is, the fastest linebacker in, what, 15 years or something at the combine. First, he wasn't invited to the combine. Then he goes and has the fastest 40 that they'd seen in 10, 15 years. And then it actually translates on the field. And there's lots of guys that have... There are some guys that have field speed, like they're faster on the field, like when a carrot's dangling in front of them. I felt like I was more that kind of player. And then there are players that, you know, they're really fast, but they don't it doesn't show up on the field. And this guy's really fast, and it shows up on the field.
When you see him, do you see a one-handed linebacker, or are you looking now and seeing a guy that makes plays? What do you see when you look out
there? I see a guy making plays. I do have questions, you know, about that and how, you know, being able to wrap up and stuff like that. But, look, he's dealt with it for his whole life. He's used to it. So I don't see it being a factor right now. We'll see if that comes up at some point. But I don't think it's going to.
It's my eyes are drawn to it when I look at him. And that... Look, it doesn't really matter because I'm not evaluating his talent or making any decisions on his playing time. But I find myself not really fixating on it, but each time and when I watch him involved in a tackle, I'm trying to look and see, and I'm scrutinizing him in a way I don't scrutinize other players. And then when I looked at the stats and saw 9 tackles, I immediately found myself not doubting the productivity because tackles are tackles, but I'm like, wow, was that a reflection of him being on the field a lot? Was that him being in position to sort of catch tackles, that he's playing back and not being aggressive and going forward? It's really encouraging to hear your assessment, to hear what you've seen from him and how he's making plays, and that this is a guy that I'm looking forward to getting more to the point where I'm no longer either questioning why I'm scrutinizing him so much or trying to see, like, is this for real? Is this really, is this warranted all of the attention that's being heaped on him?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a logical way to look at it. Of course, you've never seen a player that is missing a hand to play in the NFL, and whether or not that's going to show up, that's perfectly natural for people to wonder if that's going to be the case. But not seeing it, man, and just the way, not only does the speed show up, but it's how decisive he is. And when he sees something, he pulls the trigger and flies through. And I think he's going to be a big hitter too. So, because of that speed, but
how do you get him on the field, though, Dave? Because, I mean, you got KJ and Bobby out there, and I suppose he's too small to play the Mingo spot there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. Why not? Why wouldn't you put your best players out on the field? Who cares if he doesn't fit some body type? If he can play better and set the edge and do all those things, it's not like you
Mingo's
have
not
to
that big.
Yeah, I mean, he's tall and lean, and that's kind of what you want. And I think he maybe will end up being a little bit more of a pass rusher. The one thing I see is, like, when they drop back in coverage, Mingo seems kind of lost. a little bit. And I don't know how good he's going to be dropping back in zone and, you know, how he's going to get that, whereas you see Shaquem Griffin get it.
That is a bad sign, isn't it? I mean, Mingo's not a rookie. This is Mingo's fourth team.
I don't know how much he's been asked to do that in the past, you know. And so, you know, I always used to always tell the younger high school players that, you know, when we play zone, you know, this is the area you're dropping to, but don't drop there and just cover a piece of dirt. You know, look at the pattern progression and, you know, look at the quarterback's eyes and try to figure out what's going on behind you based on what you see in front of you. And Shaquem definitely already has that sense about him, and whereas I'm not really seeing that from Mingo. But
yeah, well, haven't they been using him as a backup to KJ?
Yes,
yeah, he's been a backup.
So could he possibly be at that other position, the Sam spot or whatever?
I liked what you called it as the Mingo spot. I was like, is there a new position on the defense? Because I know we've had the Sam.
There's the Mike,
linebacker.
Will, and Mingo.
And there's also the Leo, and now apparently we have the Mingo spot.
Well, because I think the Mingo spot's available for any all-comers. Because I'm not a bark guy. I like his name. But I look at a guy that was drafted 6th overall, and I'm going, well, you haven't worked out at 3 different places. Why are you going to work out here? I know everybody thinks it's some sort of miracle elixir when you come here to Lake Washington and get on this field and Pete Carroll and win forever and all that stuff. But I don't really see Mingo being a big factor on this team if he wasn't a factor on the previous 3 teams. And so you hear about Shaquem Griffin and everything he's doing, and he seems to me like he could maybe help the pass rushing too.
What are you excited about?
Nothing, Danny. Nothing at all.
I know what he's going to say.
Big change.
I mentioned last week. Actually, I am excited about it. I mentioned last week I'm excited about Mike Solari and Schottenheimer and the new offense. But I like what I'm hearing about Brandon Marshall. I think it's kind of cool that maybe he has a year or two left, and he might end up being that second receiver to Doug Baldwin. Because we talk about Lockett being the number 2 guy, but we'll see. Brandon Marshall's done it for years, and you look at his numbers and you think, even if he's in the twilight of his career, you'll take that big lanky guy. You're missing Jimmy Graham, so Brandon Marshall being out there.
Yeah. Well, welcome aboard. I'm on the Brandon mission.
Yeah, I like Brandon Marshall, and of course, I like the punter. I like the kicking competition.
I'm
pulling for Jason
Full
Myers.
Full of enthusiasm.
I'm pulling for Myers. I don't want the left-footed big fella from Oakland. I want to see the other guy. I want to see the younger guy because...
What do you have against the left-footed kicker?
That he's 41 years old, and if Myers can make the team, you'll have a kicker here for a longer time. Like
61-year-old guy discriminating against a 41-year-old kicker?
Yeah, I want to see the other guy make it. I do. And I think the other guy's more comfortable with the Australian punter as a holder. I think that might be a factor, too. And then the whole rest of it, the offense, the defense I've got questions about. I think there's going to be some higher-scoring games. So if you're betting on Seahawks games this year, you might want to be looking at the over because I think the offense is going to be better, but the defense will be giving up more points this year.
I'll say this about Brandon Marshall, and it took, one catch where I went from, I don't know if he's going to make the team, a 20% probability according to my computer-like brain, like my old computer-like brain, like a Apple IIe where you program the turtle to draw a circle. Like, that would be, if my brain was a computer, that's what kind of computer it would be. Something suitable to use for a planter box now.
What do you think Jim's is? Is like paper and pencil?
I think it's a game of Pong.
Sorry, Jim.
Game
Pong.
Of Pong.
Yeah, there we
that's
go.
That's how it's going back and forth. He goes from one side. Well, it could be this way. Nope, but it actually might be the other way.
And so that's how you are with Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall's 100% to make this team now.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I don't think there's not any doubt in my mind. That
unless they don't want an older guy and they think so much of the younger guys, because you look at all the receivers, who are they going to keep? How many are they keeping? 6?
6 at the very most.
They could keep 5 and J.D. McKissic.
Yep.
Could be a hybrid.
There's a lot of moving parts there. I don't see a way I think the only way Brandon Marshall doesn't make this team is that he gets injured. That an injury is the only thing that's going to keep him off the team now. And I've so fully talked myself into this idea of I saw one pass in the end zone, a back shoulder fade that he went up and got. And since that moment, he's practiced every single day. He looks fantastic. And I've talked myself into the idea that that guy coming back and playing this season for $2 million, the fact that he chose to do that, I think shows how much he wants to still play football and be a factor for a team. It wasn't about, hey, can they give me a job that's worth my while? Like, it was really like, am I satisfied being done with my career or not? And he decided no. And he came back to an opportunity here that he is going to make the absolute most of. And if he ends the season with 45, 50 catches, yeah, I can now see that.
Is he the kind of guy that's going to be okay if he doesn't get enough targets?
I think so, because if he wasn't the kind of guy that was going to be okay if he didn't get that many targets, he wouldn't play for $2 million.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have signed here.
Right. Well, he didn't get many offers, though.
Well, right? but that's the thing, is if it was that point of like, hey, I've got to be the go-to receiver, the go-to receiver doesn't make $2 million. Like, I think he's already had, if that was the ego pill that he was going to have to swallow, he's already swallowed it by taking the $2 million offer. This is how far into the Brandon Marshall bandwagon I am. I'm absolutely driving the bus at this point.
Well, I mean, I think you're right. Now, I haven't looked at it as a lock, like 100%, like you guys said, but...
Just not a smoking lock.
Yeah, well, we don't want to hear that, that's for sure. But, you know, now all of a sudden you go, okay, you got Doug, you got Tyler Lockett, you've got him, and then I think Jerron Brown, he's going to make the team. I'm pretty sure. So there's four, but now all of a sudden you see Stringfellow. He is all of a sudden popping up, and then you've got David Moore. And also, Keenan Reynolds, I still think, you know, has a shot at it. And also, you throw in there Amar Darboh and Tanner McAvoy. Those guys kind of falling off a little bit, whereas, you know, last year you were pretty confident that they were going to make the team. So now all of a sudden, this wide receiver group that you're like, man, how in the world is this going to shake out? It seems to me that it's starting to become pretty clear.
Are they at the point they're going to drop Darboh?
I think it's a big question this year. I think he's more on the bubble than CJ Procise and certainly Nick Vannett. I think Nick Vannett's a lock on the roster. We'll talk to him coming up at 5. I don't expect them to move on from CJ Procise. I think Darboh's playing for his roster spot.
Yeah, the only thing about Procise is that I would worry about McKissick making the team if Procise makes it, because they seem one and the same a little bit. I love J.D. McKissick. I want to see him on the team again.
I think he's on there, too. It's Danny David Moore. It's time for us to take two.
Take two.
Mariners have the day off today, and this just in. Thank you, C-Rod, from the studio. Yasiel Puig was suspended 2 games, but is appealing. He will be eligible to play against the Mariners as they take on the Dodgers this weekend.
Let's get Puig in here. See him get feisty. You know what? I'm selfish because I want to see him play. I'm excited that he's not suspended for this series. I know that's the wrong way to look at it as a Mariner fan. I like Puig, man. I like the way he plays. I like how big he is. And it's going to be a fun series with the Dodgers in town.
I'm with you, too, on Yasiel Puig, but read Bill Plaschke's column in the L.A. Times today about him. He just feels like it's run its course, tired of Puig's antics, doesn't feel like he's worth it anymore. You look at his numbers haven't been that great, but as far as being flamboyant and being a fun guy to go to Safeco Field to watch, I'd sure as hell rather watch Yasiel Puig than Chris Taylor when he comes back. You know how I feel about Chris Taylor. Have I mentioned that?
Yeah.
I can't stand him.
It's so funny.
I want him to do poorly. I want him to go 0-for. I do. The whole weekend. He was a disaster here, and then he goes down. He's a star in L.A. Nah.
What's the guy's name? Bill Brashke?
Bill Plaschke.
Oh, Plaschke.
Yeah, you see him on Around the Horn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to work with him at the PI. I used to edit his copy and everything.
Does he shower in vodka?
Does he shower in vodka?
No,
Bill Plaschke showers in vodka.
Sorry. Well, is he one of those old school baseball guys? I got to be, you know, the guardian for the integrity of the game. You see a lot of people in baseball, a lot of the writers that feel like they're that guy, and so he's tired of Puig's antics.
Plaschke likes bat flipping. He said in the column. He just said that. Well, maybe if we'd been watching Puig all year, we'd be sick of him too.
It could be. I mean, maybe he's a little bit of a jackass. I saw. Remember after he got, would he get fired or he got sent down or something, and he was out with the AAA team doing shots and stuff like that. Was that last year?
Yeah, he had no shirt on in the clubhouse video.
Yeah, which I was like, all right, well, the guy likes to have fun.
I know you don't tweet, Wyman, but if you follow Puig on Twitter, he's like an amazing follow. A couple times, I think it was either Ken Rosenthal or it might have been J.P., who's the other National
John
Paul
Morosi. John Heyman.
Someone no, it's one of those two. But one of them accidentally reported that he was informed he was going to be traded, and that's why he was an late scratch. And it was wrong. The whole report was wrong. And he tweeted out, I feel like it was Rosenthal. Anyway, just said, you know, I'm so sorry that I did this. I completely, you know, wronged him for doing that. And he said, it's okay. We all make mistakes. Puig, your friend. And then Jared Goff.
Puig, your friend.
Puig, your friend. It's his thing. And then Jared Goff, in 2013, tweeted out, I really hope Yasiel Puig gets a fastball in his ribs tomorrow. 3 years later, when he got drafted to L.A., Puig quoted it and said, at Jared Goff, Big hug. Welcome to LA. I show you around. Be my guest to Dodgers game. Hashtag tweet your friend. Hashtag tweet not late.
I would say this.
Come on.
When we do not love that.
I know.
Danny, Dave, your friend.
The Storm are going to play in the Huskies Arena for the rest of the season.
Why is that? Because they're still going to play a basketball game at Key Arena.
I thought it was just for next season they're moving in there. Maybe I misread the story.
Oh, maybe I misread your story that you sent to me.
I have it right here. No, that while Key Arena is being renovated, they're going to play Alaska Airlines Arena next year. And it's a temporary situation. And they're thinking about doing it in 2020 as well. But I think it should be permanent. I think that'd be a great move. Go ahead and have the Storm there at Alaska Airlines Arena, a smaller arena. I think it'd be a great atmosphere there. And we've seen it for Husky Women's Hoop. I think it'd be good for the Storm.
Yeah, yeah. We went to the sold-out game there.
Yes.
Remember where none of us could sit together.
And Jim ended up sitting two rows behind Sierra.
Yeah, so we went to see Kelsey Plum and got beat by
Stanford.
By Russell's sisters, Anna's team.
Anna was out here today.
Was she here today?
Yeah.
I talked to her a few days ago when she was out there. Fellow little Stanford talk there where she stayed and all that stuff. What a great kid. But, that was a great environment there at Alaska Airlines.
I love Alaska Airlines. I think it's great for them. I think it can be a challenge at times professionally. I don't know if they – do they sell beer? Can you sell beer? I don't think you can because it's
on campus. I was just asking that question today. I haven't been to a college game in a long time. And when we were at the women's college game, there wasn't beer there, was there?
No, they don't sell it during college. But there are some places you can get it during Husky football games. It's just specific spots. There's a beer deck.
It has to be at Washington State, right?
Certain spots.
I just figure that they hand out a beer to everybody that comes through. You know,
I think they just
no matter
don't
what
frisk
age
people
you are,
for
I mean, this
fireball.
Is kind of what we're about here.
That's incorrect. They like Washington, tend to moderate and limit it with moderation.
Did you hear the story about Pat Chan over at the Tri-Cities, a fundraiser over there? There was an older Coug fan. Did you hear about this, Jess?
No.
That came up to him and noticed that he had his little badge on, and then you get drink tickets, too, with your badge. And she noticed his tag was flipped around, and she saw the drink tickets. And they hadn't been used, and she informed Pat Chun that, hey, a true Coug will have used his drink tickets right now.
Yeah. Go Cougs!
That sounds about right.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We got Jerry DePoto. The Mariners GM joins us next.
This is the Jerry DePoto Show.
Presented by Ram Trucks.
And Geico. Every Thursday at 3:30 with Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Forward to it every week.
The latest transaction. The breakdown on the Mariners' latest moves. The reason behind the decisions that shape the organization.
I love the time together. It gives me a chance to hold myself accountable.
Now, here's Danny, Dave, and Moore.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. We're here at Seahawks headquarters, and we welcome in Jerry DePoto, Mariners General Manager, is with us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Jerry, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Well, I realize we're doing very well. I realize that the success of your team early in the season has given us the privilege of having stomach aches throughout the final month and a half of the season because we get to sweat through all these games. I love the excruciating feeling of a close game, and this past week has been some of the best played baseball that I've seen in a long time.
If you like the excruciating pain of close games, welcome to the Mariners this year. It's that's what we do, and this past week was a great example. You know, a terrific 4 days for us in Houston, super energy from everybody, and outstanding performances from so many people, but maybe none more than Edwin. He's been terrific. And then in Oakland, although we won just one out of the three, we played them tight 3 days in a row, and finally we were able to push one across. And just like you thought it would happen, it was a game-winning homer from D. Gordon.
Let me ask you about that, because it's a great D. Gordon, who had moved in the lineup. He's batting ninth. He's playing center field after half the season at second base. And he still seems like he embodies a lot of the spirit of your team. And he doesn't often hit home runs, but when he does, they're game-winning. It's the second time he's done it this year.
That's amazing. And, you know, D, in so many ways, when he goes, we go, there's some of that to this. Even with hitting at the bottom of the lineup rather than the top. But so much of the success that we've enjoyed this year is when D's doing the things that D does. And, you know, he has not been as aggressive running the bases, really, I think, due to the issue he was having with his toe around midseason. And, you know, it was good to see him energetic. It was nice seeing him back out in center field. I thought he looked great out there. And all things being equal, the versatility that we showed those last couple of days in Oakland with what we were able to do with our lineup, with Robbie being able to move around the field, with D playing the two different positions, it just gives us so many options in a game that we just haven't had before.
Yeah, and speaking of D, I saw a quote from Ryan Healy in a really good article by Jason Jenks about D Gordon. He said he does things that I want to do. That, like, I feel like D Gordon has that kind of personality where I have a buddy like this, Jerry, that like if I said the things he said, I would probably get punched. And he just has a way of getting away with it. And you see the stuff that D Gordon does. And everybody talks about, well, baseball needs to lighten up a little bit. And there's kind of the old guard that doesn't like all the celebrating and everything. And he pulls it off in a really cool way. And it just makes it fun for everybody.
It really does. And I will say, and I'm not embarrassed to say, D is much cooler than I am. I think he's cooler than most of us. He has such an easy way about him. He gets along with everybody that he comes across. His energy is genuine. It's infectious. And when D's smiling, I think we're a good team. Now, obviously, it hasn't always been wine and roses for him. He had some struggles there through the middle of the summer. Hopefully, that's behind him, and he's able to start doing the things that he's always done in his career. And yesterday was a great step in that direction.
Was he completely okay with going to number 9 in the order?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody ever is. I think most guys who are typically used to hitting leadoff like to hit leadoff, and that's what they do. But, you know, as D said to Scott when he was approached about it, he said, "I'll do whatever we need to do for the team to win." And, you know, he knew he wasn't doing the things that he had ordinarily done and that he was doing for the first 2-3 months of the season. So, yeah, he's as accountable as anybody in our clubhouse, and I don't think he intends on hitting ninth for the remainder of the season, and neither do we. It's just a kickstart for the lineup, and it's worked. I give Scott and the staff credit, and give Mitch a ton of credit. We jockeyed that lineup pretty good. I mean, we moved the guys around, and it really stirred up the offense, and couldn't be happier with the results of late.
Is it something with D. Gordon, Jerry, that you just figure, well, okay, he's only got 6 or 7 walks on the year, but we knew what we were getting when we got him from Miami?
Yeah, we knew we were getting a slasher. And, you know, now D, I will say this, that when D is D, when he's on his game, he's going to be hitting somewhere in that 300, 315 type of range, and you don't really notice the limited walks. But, you know, when he's hitting 280-ish, which is right about where he is now, you do miss it a little bit. And you know, through the course of our offensive struggles from really the beginning of July until the first week of August, we had so many quiet days offensively, and though D was doing the things that he typically does, swinging the bat, the inability to create rallies with no one on base, you can't score when there's not runners on base, and this was just something to juggle it. And I don't think it was necessarily attributed to D's struggles, but more our offense. Just that we wanted to jam the top on base guys up at the top of the order and see if it resulted in runs. And very quickly, you know, that first night in Houston, it did. And you know, we just took the guys who have been getting on base the most regularly and hit them consecutively, and all of a sudden we were able to string together some runs. And that's infectious, too. And when you hit and when you score, you tend to do that over and again. And I think the lineup is showing more confidence as a result.
From a big-picture perspective, and we're talking to Jerry DePoto, the Mariners' general manager. Come back from a road trip, 6-4 on that, and it included two series against the teams that you're chasing right now in the division. All games were close in that series of 7 games against Houston, then in Oakland. How do you feel, day off today, how do you feel about where your team stands right now entering this kind of final kick, the final closing kick of the season?
Pretty good. You know, I'd feel better if I could put my finger on what day James Paxton will start again, but I can't. But you know, coming off the road trip, as a general rule, and I believe this every day I've ever been in professional baseball, in every 10-game stretch, I'll take 6-4. You do that, you're going to play a lot of postseason baseball for years. And especially when you're playing teams like Houston and Oakland in their place. It was a successful road trip for us. Wish we wouldn't have shot ourselves in the foot in Texas because we had opportunities there to make it even better. But know, we'll look ahead. I really like where we are. Again, I hate to keep going back to it, but that final day of spring training, if you told us this is where we'd be on August 16th with 70 wins and within 2.5 games of a playoff position, would be ecstatic with that. And we are. We just have to figure out a way to make that ground up.
Hey, Jerry, when you have a game like that, I got a chance to, when I broadcast the games, there's a plexiglass window between us and the coaches, and I get a chance to see them. And Super Bowl 48, when the Seahawks beat the Broncos, there was all the scouts over in the booth next to us, and you could see them through the plexiglass. What do you do when you're – where are you at the games, and especially when you have that kind of a game like you did the other day? What are you doing? Are you pacing around? Are you sitting down? Are you calm? What's it look like?
I try to be calm. I know that sometimes, like any other fan of the game, you tend to get high and low. But you know, as I've learned in this job, you have to do the best you can not to show it. Because just like when you're on the field, the other players will feed off the body language of their teammates. And the same things will happen with front office executives and the like. So you know, we generally watch the home games from a suite that is designated for the front office. And on the road, they'll typically give us a booth of some sort somewhere on the press level, you know, a radio booth or a suite that's not being used. And most of the time I'm there by myself, so I can feel free to throw my brick at the TV if I want to. But I typically don't. Try to watch quietly. And the thing I remind myself of every time I'm watching the game is I just try to take myself back 25 years ago and remember how hard it is to play. It really is a very hard game to play. And the nuances of the long season and the way you go through the hot and cold streaks, I try not to put undue pressure on the players through my own lens because I've been there.
Hey, Jerry, with Guillermo Heredia, I know he's great defensively and everything, but where do you draw the line on what he doesn't give you offensively, what he does give you defensively, and where Ben Gamel factors into all of that?
Ben will factor in, again, very quickly. We can only carry so many of them on the roster. And, you know, at some point we will be looking at Ben again pretty quickly. Guillermo gives you an opportunity against right-hand pitching, or just left-hand pitching. It hasn't been as good this year as it has historically been. He got off to a terrific start, and really has been a cold 3 or 4 months for him with the bat. But he does do terrific things defensively. I don't think we go 6-4 on that trip if Guillermo is not playing center field in Houston in the eighth inning of the middle game, where we had an opportunity to win or bump the series. So I do recognize the things that he provides us. He's a terrific teammate who brings high energy, but it just hasn't been a very good year for him with the bat. And at some point, Ben Gamel does offer more, and Ben will get an opportunity to swing the bat here pretty soon.
We've seen Robinson Cano back with the team. He had 3 hits in his first 2 games. How do you think things are going for him so far?
Really good. It's great to have him back. Just our lineup looks different with him in the middle of it. And I really couldn't be happier with the fact that he's been, you know, willing to move around the field. Because I know it's not a comfortable thing when you've done one thing for as long as he has and done it so well. For him to take his glove and move over to first base, to take ground balls at third, and then to go play second. And even an in-game move like he made yesterday, you know, moving from second base to first base, that allowed Scott to do some really interesting things with the lineup in-game that were more like a National League team, because we become so much more flexible in our current state with Robbie able or willing to do those things. And it just gives us a different presence in the middle of the order. And believe me, after watching for the last 5 or 6 weeks, as much as we sometimes struggle to score runs, it's nice to have that presence.
He also, unsurprisingly, looked exceptionally cool even at first base. He had a great-looking glove, Jerry, that he picked up somewhere along the way. He remains the most stylish major leaguer.
He is stylish, and perhaps the only guy on the field that has any chance of being as cool as D.
Very fair.
Wait, where did he get that glove from? Jerry, do you remember? Didn't somebody in the league loan him the glove?
Yeah, if I'm looking at the glove, I don't want to out people from sharing equipment. But if I'm looking at the glove and I remember correctly, it looks an awful lot like the ones Albert Pujols uses.
And, okay,
you know, not a bad glove to sport. Gotcha. Wear a first baseman's glove.
It is true, Jerry. We always appreciate your time. Looking forward to having the Dodgers in here beginning tomorrow. Thanks so much, man. Have a great day.
You got it, guys.
Right, that is Jerry DePoto. It is Danny Davenport. We'll sum up Seahawks practice and two guys, well, actually, no, three guys who are back on the field just in the nick of time. We'll tell you who they are next.
Danny, Dave, and more. Streaming on every device on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Fun to hear from Jerry DePoto, and the Mariners returning home. Big series against the Dodgers. It doesn't get any easier than the Astros coming to town. They got a tough road through this final quarter of the season, a home stretch here. We'll talk more about that coming up. Three players that were back on the practice field today that very much needed to be. CJ Procise, Byron Maxwell, and DJ Alexander. Three guys who could factor very prominently into the season, but in some ways three guys that I think need to play and play well to show that they're going to be productive members of this team, because none of them were available for that first preseason game.
Especially CJ Procise. He's a guy that needs to prove that he can be available. And sometimes, look, you know, some guys get hurt. And it's bad luck at times. You know, I don't know. How do you break your scapula? We've talked about that before.
I believe it's by flipping into the end zone.
You think that's how it happened?
I remain convinced not convinced. That remains my theory. It's related to one of the Stecker theories.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Stecker's got his theories. I got mine.
Yeah, that would be bad if that's how that happened. But, you know, he had a broken hand, but he just needs to be out here, and it's just a simple fact. I mean, you know, whether it's his fault or not, not questioning his toughness, because I do think he's a tough guy, but he has to be able to be out here and practice. Coaches, if they don't see you, and I said this many times, and it's, you know, it was kind of in response to Ed Dixon, one of the coaches. Like, how's he doing? How about Ed Dixon? I was like, haven't seen him. And I'm like, well, you know what? He's got 8 years of film. We know what he can do, but it doesn't matter. If you're not out here practicing with this team, then it's going to be tough for you to make the team. So CJ Procise needs to be out there. DJ Alexander, I've been excited about. I think he's a really good linebacker. He's just very raw. He has some things that I think Ken Norton can help him with, and being around Bobby and KJ will really help him. But we know what a great special team player he is. Who's the third one?
Byron Maxwell,
yeah. And Maxie's a guy we know what we're going to get from him pretty much. But, again, you got to see it, you know. And I think he'd had a much more challenging time making the team if he wasn't able to practice the entire camp.
Yeah, don't you feel like Maxwell's going to be the starter out there?
I do. Mean,
what, Trey Flowers is pushing him that hard?
I think that Trey Flowers might end up being the better of those two corners this year. Trey Flowers certainly has the higher ceiling. I think
second half of the season or earlier than that?
I think the second half of the season. I can't imagine him being the starter week one without there being an injury or something to push it there. But you've also got Dante Johnson, a player that the Seahawks signed from San Francisco who was out the first week, and he's practicing more now.
Yeah, you mentioned that, Danny, and I think he gets forgotten sometimes, but he started a lot of games for the 49ers. Maybe we just discount, he was with the 49ers, but still. A starting cornerback in the NFL, and you always hear Flowers and you hear Maxwell, but you don't really hear much about Johnson, part of it because he was hurt.
Yes, and some of it is the tie doesn't go to the veteran guy here at Seahawks. Like, when there's a tie, they generally go with the younger, cheaper guy that will probably have a higher ceiling. So I guess that's why I would include there. It's still hard for me to imagine CJ Procise not making this team. It's hard for me to imagine.
Based on the New England and Philadelphia games 2 years ago.
His talent level, yes. Yeah. His talent level, what he's able to do, and that the uniqueness of that skill set and the fact that it's not been that he's been a bad football player, he just hasn't been available. It's hard for me to imagine them cutting. Let's bring in John Clayton, see what he thinks about it. That'll be coming up next. We'll talk about whether CJ Procise is on this team's bubble. That's next.